Hello, I'm here with David Icke, and he held a long lecture last night in Maastricht, and that was like 12 hours with some little breaks. And actually, you had some lectures in Germany, but they were cancelled in Stuttgart and in Berlin. So political correctness is really, it's going around all over the world. Or what is your impression? Is it especially bad in Germany? And it's a shame for my country, actually. But what do you think of that? Is it coming everywhere that you can't, that free speech isn't anymore?
Germany is a tyranny, masquerading as a free country. Something like 14 venues in Germany either took our booking and then cancelled after the ultra Zionist hate groups lied about what I would say, or they wouldn't take the booking in the first place. It's an extraordinary thing that Germans will walk along the street every day thinking they live in a free country, thinking that they have a democracy, that they are not a dictatorship, when the opposite is the case. What happens is, if a venue takes a booking, once the address and location is revealed, the tickets go on sale, ultra-Zionist hate groups, ironically, who say we must stop hate while being full of it. Because what do these ultra-Zionist hate groups seek to do? They seek to make the public hate their targets. They demonize their targets, trying to get the public to hate them. So they're hate groups, and they are the very epitome of everything they claim to stand against. Ironically, they are also acting in precisely the way the Nazis did in Germany. And like every other tyranny does. If you're going to control a country in a dictatorial way, you have to control the flow of information. The Nazis did this. What did the Nazis do when they were seeking power and imposing total power? They burned the books. They broke up meetings, banned meetings, public meetings of those who were putting another view or challenging and exposing the Nazis for what they were doing. And they were right about what they were saying the Nazis were all about. So here we have, Joe, a situation where people who claim to be anti-Nazi, who claim to be anti-hate, seek to demonize and get the public to hate their targets, and use that disgusting technique to do what the Nazis did, which was to silence any opposition to the prevailing narrative of the state, and indeed the narrative of the ultra-Zionist hate groups. And Germans have a choice. They can go on accepting this, but at least be honest with themselves that they do not live in a free country. They live in a tyranny. Or they can say and come to an understanding, hey, we don't live in a free country, do we? We live in a tyranny. And do something about it. I have been learned all my life. I've been told all my life that German people are strong, that German people don't take crap, right? Yeah. German people currently are taking crap every day. They're having their country taken over, their freedom deleted, by what is a tiny handful of anti-Zionist hate groups. And that is the story of the whole control system. Its whole foundation of control is intimidation. Yeah. When you're not intimidated, it doesn't know what to do. It's like these hate groups, these Zionist hate groups, that, you know, me and Jamie have faced, when you're not intimidated by them, they lose their power. And you know, when they shut something down, then you just build something up. Okay, so they're going around, you know, like the fairground. They're going around with the hammer, and it just keeps coming up here. Yeah. So yeah. Hello, all right. Hello, whoa, hello, over here.
I won't succeed. That's my opinion. But you think you say it's all part of a plan to control the whole world. So it's in Germany, but it can happen everywhere. And it starts with that you are not allowed to question what's going on.
Exactly.
You're doing that. You're talking about agenda 2015, 2030. Can you elaborate a bit about the plans that are coming or that they want to come up and hopefully are not coming?
Well, let's just take it on, and I'll bring it round to that.
Yeah.
How the freedom to speak in Germany, and this is other places as well, happening in Britain, is done, is the ultra-Zionist hate groups, a tiny number of people. Most Jewish people don't even know they exist. I've talked to Jewish people. I said, have you heard of this organization that's trying to stop me speaking? They said, no, mate, never heard of it. And this is the sad thing. And in another way, a disgusting thing is that these tiny group of hate-filled bigots are doing it in the name of Jewish people in general, when Jewish people in general don't even know it's happening. And what happens then is people get tarred, the whole of the Jewish people get tarred with the actions of the tiny few. So as I've said in the new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, these hate groups are not just the enemy of freedom, they're the enemy of the Jewish people. And what happens is they contact venues, and when you get the odd one who would resist and say, no, we're going to let him speak, or at least won't fold immediately, they then get threats. They threaten the people, they threaten the staff. They threaten the venue or the venue group or the hotel group with financial consequences and a boycott if they allow me to speak.
Not only in Germany.
Not only in Germany. No, not only in Germany. Yeah. Increasingly wider and wider. But Germany is fundamentally a major, major example of this. What this is part of, to go into the wider question you pose, it is an expression of this absolute global war on freedom of speech. And it's happening for this reason. If you're going to control a vast number of people, and there's only a few of you, you have to control the flow of information, because you can't control them physically. They want to do that with technology and what's called transhumanism, but at the moment they have to control people by controlling one simple thing: the people's perception of reality, the people's perception of events. These ultra-Zionist hate groups, for instance, as an example, are trying to manipulate the perceptions of the population and the perceptions of these venues, that I'm some kind of hate preacher. When I'm talking about the fact we need to love each other, I'll leave the hate to them. And so if you control perception, you control people's behavior, you control what they will believe, what they won't believe, what they'll do, what they won't do, what they'll challenge, what they won't challenge, what they'll accept, what they won't accept. Now, what has been happening with the development of the internet is that the internet is a almost perfect system of perception manipulation and mass surveillance. And that's what the internet was created for. That's why DARPA, the technological development arm of the Pentagon, claims that it created the internet.
1969 or something already.
Yeah, yeah. It's this has been planned all along. I mean, when something hits the public arena, that's only when you see it. It's been planned long before. But if they were going to sell this mass surveillance, mass perception manipulation technology called the internet, it's no good bringing it in the form that you want it. Because people will say, what's the benefit for us? It's just a control system. Go away. So you have to sell it the benefits of it. So when the internet came in, we've been through this period, fast closing, by the way, where there was the free flow of information, where you could speak your truth and have your opinion and reveal your evidence without censorship. But that was never the plan of where it was supposed to end. That was to get people hooked. That was to get everything connected to the internet. It was to get the internet as the prime central means of global communication between people. What we've been seeing now, and these ultra-Zionist hate groups are a part of it, is the deletion, the blatant, in-your-face deletion now, of the parts of the internet that were good for humanity, which is the free flow of information, leaving only what is bad for humanity, which is the control of the flow of information, i.e., the information from which people get their perceptions of everything from.
And surveillance, actually.
You have and the surveillance.
Say, I listen to you.
Yeah, the surveillance. It's a mass surveillance system, Joe, as you well know. This is what we're seeing now. And so you cannot divorce the ultra-Zionist hate groups trying to silence me from Google. Google own YouTube, Facebook, and all these other giant corporations of the internet that are now openly, they're not even hiding it, they're now openly destroying the alternative media and alternative opinion by either deleting websites or pushing them so far down the search engines that unless you're really looking for them, you'd never find them. YouTube is more and more censoring content, and it was always planned to be like that. It's simple thing, okay? Fishing rod. Oh, the internet's great. Isn't the internet great? You can say anything you like, right? Yeah. You only communicate through the internet now. Okay, that's good. Okay. Well, actually, we think that fake news, because we decide what fake news is, and all this other stuff where you're saying something different to the state's wisdom, the state's version of events. No, not having that. And so this is what we're seeing, and it's all been planned from the start. Google own YouTube, Facebook. They are monsters. They are enemies of freedom on a scale that we've hardly seen before. They are the digital book burners. They are the Nazis.
What isn't actually
of modern day?
Aren't actually people using the internet differently than they thought? You mean Facebook was planned? You have your contacts, you share your friends and whatever, and your parties. And actually, when I look at Facebook, there are so many critical things about what's going on, and so many spiritual things being shared. So. Let's look on the bright side, because it looks all very disturbing. Is there a chance that people are waking up and sharing that on that internet that was just supposed to share what you have had for lunch or whatever?
Well, I don't think that the people in the shadows that were behind the internet were stupid enough to believe that a lot of what they didn't want people to see would initially be circulated on the internet. They probably factored that in. I think, I do agree, I think they've been very, very surprised at the scale of it. And you see, what happens when you're given a certain view of the world, and that's all you get from cradle to grave, which is basically what most people get, then your perceptions are formed from that sense of reality, from that information received. What the alternative media has done in this intervening period before the censorship began is to give people another way of looking at the world and world events, and it has it's had a massive effect, because people have said, hold on a minute, this makes more sense of what we've been told up to this point. And that impact, and you're right, I just finished this all-day event world tour, the Worldwide Wake-Up Tour, over the last 18 months, just finished it in Maastricht. And I've seen tremendous changes in the number of people and the kind of people that are questioning things that they wouldn't question before. It is happening, there's no doubt about it. And the fact that it's happening, and the fact that it is happening ever more quickly, has created this urgency among the shadow-owned, all in the end answering to the same masters, Google, Facebook, YouTube, etc. It's given them this urgency to lock down the free flow of information and to deny people this other way of looking at the world. And you know, in terms of, you know, people are still communicating this information. Yes, they are. Nothing like they were before in terms of its profile because of all the manipulation by Google of the search engine listings and the news listings. But I would just emphasize that where we are now is not where it's meant to be or meant to lead. Where it's meant to lead is that anything that challenges the official narrative is to be deleted and denied. That's where it's leading. We're only where we are now.
There are plans for total enslavement of humankind. You talked about it at length, and everything is going in that direction. And you're talking about the mind set behind that, and you're talking about the Archons, the Demiurge, and you have been talking in our last interview actually about the Nag Hammadi scriptures that were found at the Red Sea, I think. And what kind of spirit is behind that? Are you talking about that it is without empathy? But where does it come from?
Well, the thing is, the world of the seen, which is just ludicrously small, it's a tiny, tiny frequency band. People don't realize this. They look into the world and they think that they can see everything in the space they're looking at. They can see a tiny frequency band in the space they're looking at. That's all that the human sight senses can decode. It's called visible light. And if you think that mainstream science says that or estimates that what we call the electromagnetic spectrum is 0.005% of what exists in the universe. Well, visible light, the only little band of frequency we can see, is a tiny fraction of the 0.005%. So therefore, let's just take a breath and lose this, well, arrogance that we can make sweeping statements about what's happening in this tiny frequency band from the perspective only of the frequency band. It's ridiculous. As many philosophers have said over the years, words to the effect of wisdom is knowing how little we know. We need to realize that from our visual perspective, in this tiny range of visible light, there's no way that we can understand the world we're in. In the true sense and context. So when you think that outside of this tiny band lies infinity, and within infinity and infinite potential, infinite possibility, what kind of expressions of life must there be? Look at this tiny band of frequency. Now look at the different expressions of life within that alone. Look at the different human forms. Look at the extraordinary different forms in the animal world, in the insect world, in the natural world in general. And that's only within that tiny band. So what the heck exists outside of that band that we can see? And looking at ancient writings, modern experience, and putting the pieces together, it's very clear that this world, this human society as we perceive it, is controlled by a force that A, is not human, that operates outside the frequency band of visible light, though it has agents within it, and in the end is not even, does not even take form. It's a state of awareness, a very distorted state of awareness, which ancient writings describe but under different names. One you've mentioned is from the Gnostic people, the Gnostic belief system, whose writings and beliefs were detailed in an amazing find found in an earthen jar at Nag Hammadi, 75-80 miles north of Luxor on the Nile in Egypt, in 1945, which had a fifth of the writings actually were about this archontic force, as I call it, and it has vehicles, specifically engineered vehicles within our reality, to manipulate the human world on its behalf. In fact, it's ultimately manipulating the human world through those vehicles. And we have names for those. If you go further back, they were called royal families and aristocratic families. Why did they think they were so special? Why did they think they were so genetically special? Why did they think they had the right to rule just because of who they were? Why did they say they were genetically descended from the gods? And we have another name for them these days. We call them the 1% or the less than 1% that actually control now around 50% of the world's wealth and expanding, that control the media, that control the banking system, that control governments, and which next puppet is going to become president or prime minister, that control the foundations, belief systems of mainstream science, that control the pharmaceutical industry, wherever you look. And what we were talking about earlier, these interbreeding bloodlines, some like the British royal family still call themselves royal, but what were the royal families before and the aristocratic families before are now wear dark suits and operate in politics and all these areas that I'm talking about. But what they're doing now is exactly what we've just been describing. They have taken over the media. They've taken over the print media a long time ago. In fact, they created most of it. They've taken over the television media and the radio media, and again, created most of it. And what they are now doing is moving the major source, the prime source of information that people receive, onto the internet and controlling it through a handful of internet giant corporations. So the 1% control, the 1%, which is a vehicle for this archontic force, this archontic distorted awareness, as I would call it, controls Google, controls YouTube, controls Facebook, controls the print media, controls governments, controls the banking system, controls Hollywood. And of course, as I travel around the world, Hollywood has been and continues to be one of the greatest forms of mind control, perceptual control, ever invented. How many people get their perceptions of historical events from Hollywood movies, not from truth? It is the home of fantasy in so many different ways, and of course, so many times the Hollywood network of,
and that's the turf of the archons, fantasy and the illusion.
Yeah, I mean the owners of Hollywood have been exposed again and again for being in cohorts with the CIA and other agencies to produce films to give people a certain impression of something that is not true. So what the alternative media has been, for obvious reasons, internet-based most of it, because when I started out, you know, communicating this information was done simply by traveling large distances, talking to next to nobody, and then going on to the next meeting, talking to next to nobody. Events that were publicized by handing leaflets out, because there was no internet worth the name then. And when I started, there was really no internet.
You would be the best customer in the coffee shop. Because
yeah, exactly. That's what you were doing. Yeah, the people don't realize that, you know, that have come into this later, yeah, and they've had the internet from the start. Just what it was like when we started out trying to communicate this. It was, you know, leaflets, word of mouth, and all that stuff. You had no money to put adverts in anything. what has happened is this control of information was challenged, and that's what they're trying to shut down now. But the point that I would make to people is that, you know, when I go around the world, and I have done since 2016, I've presented this talk in four sections. And particularly in the first section, I lay out what the agenda is. You mentioned Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 out of the United Nations, justified, by the way, by the global warming hoax, which has been orchestrated through the United Nations. And I've gone through what the plan is for human society, some of which has happened since I started the tour. And what I've done when I've gone into different countries is I've had a checklist of these various facets of the global agenda that they want to introduce. And so I go into a country maybe 5 days early, and I look at what's happening in that country, and I go through this checklist. Is it happening? Is it happening? Well, when I've gone into any culture, any area of the world, Australia, Europe, the Balkans, America, Canada, and Scandinavia, etc., it's been tick, 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 tick. It's happening everywhere. So unless people are believers in extraordinary levels of coincidence, it's centrally organized. There's a central controlling force globally that is has its satellites in different countries, and those satellites have the job, they're networks of secret societies and stuff, they have the job of introducing the centrally dictated agenda in their country. And it's happening everywhere, because America is where it's happening, all of it's happening. Because that's a mind control laboratory. That's where they
first, and then it's coming to other countries.
Yes, exactly. You know, people say, "Oh, you know, American culture is everywhere." Well, why? One of the key reasons is they try it out. I feel sorry for Americans. They're in a mind control laboratory. Increasingly, other countries are too, of course. But that's the prime one. And what they do, whether it's fast food, whether it's fast news, I'll come back to that in a second. Whatever asset of this is, GMO, etc., the radiation agenda, the technology transhumanist agenda, they test it out in America. Why 5G, which is an incredibly destructive new radiation communication system that they're bringing, it's starting in America. So
you have to explain that, because it's like mobile phone. We have 3G, 4G.
Yeah.
G now we have 4G, yeah. And 5G is coming from satellites all over.
Yeah, 5G is a big step up on the microwave destructive impact, both on the mind and on the body of health, that they're introducing as the new communication system, basically. And it's starting in America, and they've announced in America they're introducing it, and then they're not having any studies on its impact on health or its impact on human thinking, because if they did, people would go, "You're having a laugh, we're not having that." So they just don't do it. But it's all coming out of America. So if it works in America, then it's exported around the world. And people say, "Oh, the American culture is everywhere." No, what is everywhere is what has worked in America in this control system, both quote physically and mentally and emotionally, has worked in America. Now they're exporting it, you see it everywhere, because this is centrally coordinated, and we're now entering a whole new phase of this, where in every area of its ambitions, they are pushing it on faster and faster. And this is a kind of a big reason for that. I said years ago that what I was talking about that was happening under the radar, and this was the plan, it had to break the surface eventually. You can't transform human society in the way you want it unless at some point you start transforming human society where people can see it. So this is breaking the surface now. It's one of the reasons more and more people are waking up, because they're looking around and saying, "Well, I'm feeling very uneasy about what's going on. What's happening?" And so there's that point where they break the surface, and then there's the point which they want to head to, where alternative information and any alternative view is so locked down, so silenced, that information challenging the official narrative will not be circulating. And they want to make that the distance between those two points as small as possible. Because the longer it is, the more time, as this stuff comes in and people say, well, what's going on? And people say, actually, this is going on. And they're going, well, actually, that makes sense. What are we going to do? The longer that distance is, the more that will happen. And they're trying to squeeze it. And that's why they're rushing on with this in so many areas all the time.
What an important message from you is that what we are is much more than what I see. You are not David the writer, I'm not Joe the writer or taxi driver or whatever. It's not what I define myself as, my job, my money, my car, whatever. But that we are spiritual beings and that we are part of the all that there is, and we are in this body, but we are not the body. So if we understand that, and those forces keep us from understanding that, are people waking up to this consciousness?
Well, I think that's part of it. I mean, when we talk about people waking up, there's different levels of it. Some people wake up to the fact they're being lied to about world events, and they go that far initially. And other people are going much deeper and reevaluating their self-identity. See, this control of perception, which is everything, control perception, you control the person. A fundamental bottom line foundation of this control of perception is control of perception of self, control of perception of self-identity. They don't want us to realize that we are not our body, we are not our name, we are not our race, we are not our religion, we are not our income bracket. They are experiences which the true I is having. And that true I is simply a state of awareness, a state of being aware. You know, I'm sitting here and I'm communicating through a body. What's the body doing? It's locking my attention, my point of attention, into that visible light realm, so that it is decoding the body, the brain, the genetic structure in general, is the DNA, is because it's a receiver transmitter of information, as it's becoming more and more accepted. It's locking my point of attention into this narrow band of frequency called visible light. What is having that experience is my state of awareness. My state of awareness does not have form. I mean, we just go back to this archontic force. That is the same in the same situation. It's a state of awareness, but a very, very distorted one. That's why it's so evil and so monstrous in its manipulation. But my state of awareness is what's having the experience. When I leave the body, what's leaving the body and what near-death experiences are experiencing when their body dies and then that comes back to life, is they're experiencing a completely different reality when you listen to their endless common tales, because their point of attention, their awareness, has left the body. As it leaves the body, that point of attention is no longer confined to that narrow band of frequency that the body is capable of decoding. And that's what we call death. It's actually freedom of freedom from what the Gnostics called the body prison, in effect. And what this manipulative force wants is for us not to understand the true nature of who we are. Because once you realize you are not your experience, and you're not your race, you're not your religion, you're not your income bracket, you're not your culture, they are experiences. Well, potential for, and the fact that we are all points of attention within the same infinite field of consciousness, then you lose all, basically, your fault lines of divide and rule, which self-identity with all those labels allows you to play them off against other labels, which of course is what happens, and then the human race is fighting each other and imposing itself on each other and killing each other. And while they're doing that, this force symbolically is holding the strings to all of them. They don't want us to realize that, because once you realize that you are a point of attention with infinite awareness and not your name and your labels, then suddenly your sense of limitation goes. Because if all we are is a body in a physical world, because this world is, of course, not physical, just an illusion, and holographic, then everything is I can't, everything is it's not possible. But once you realize that this is, we're just having an experience, that the I is that which is having the experience, and we are infinite and eternal in our endless journey of experience, then suddenly you see yourselves in terms of your power, you see yourselves in a completely different way. Now I am the point of power, because now if I'm the one having the experience, I can control the experience. Once you think you are the experience and your labels, the labels and the experience is controlling you. So there's been this suppression. This is why when the you might call the Western powers went on their colonial journeys around the world, they targeted the shamans and the people that held this knowledge in the ancient communities and brought it through to through the cultural communication systems about the fact that we are just awareness and this is just an illusion and we're just having experiences. They targeted them. In the words of a great friend of mine, Credo Mutwa, now in his 90s, a high Zulu shaman in South Africa, when the British came into South Africa, they, quote, milked the minds of the shamans and they killed them because they didn't want this knowledge. They wanted to put a year zero on this knowledge and not have it circulating. And so to replace this ancient understanding of reality and the nature of self, they created the networks of mainstream science. And of course, mainstream science was based from the start in the fact that we are our bodies. This world is just physical. It is real. Any experiences that people have outside of that are paranormal and nonsense. It's been a lockdown on the global perception of self and who we are, and not just part. I would say the most fundamental part of the world waking up is for people to go beyond world events that are not like we're told they are, and into this understanding of nature of self, because it transforms everything. And you know, ancient writings in many parts of the world talk about this manipulative force in terms of the fact that it's terrified that humanity will wake up and remember its true nature, because then it's all over. They have to hold us in this perceptual prison cell from cradle to grave, and that's why they have to control the flow of information. They created the education system to download a narrow perception of reality to children from the earliest age. This is what it's all about. And when you put the dots together, it's just an open book what's happening.
You're referring a lot to the Matrix movies, which I think are also very interesting. There's this Neo, this Mr. Anderson, who's working in an office insurance company or whatever and thinks he has a normal life, and what he sees, his office desk, is the world. And then there is someone who says, what if I told you that this is not really what you are? And so that's pretty exciting, because it shows exactly what you're talking about. Do those people who make those, the Wachowski brothers, or what?
Yeah, Wachowski brothers, yeah.
Do they know what's going on, and do they want to show it to us, or is it just sci-fi and a coincidence? Do they want us to wake up?
Well, I don't know in terms of them what their motivations were. What I would say is I would be staggered, given the nature of the movies, if they didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And For instance, there was a real cult movie I mentioned in the talks, came out in the 1980s called They Live.
Yeah.
And They Live was produced, in fact, he did everything. I think he wrote the music, everything, by a guy called John Carpenter. And when you follow his movie history, he clearly knows what's going on. He's done a lot of Satanist stuff and movies and stuff. And a few years ago, before he died, the star of that program, that movie, which was about the fact that he discovered that humanity had been infiltrated and was being controlled by a non-human force that were hiding behind human form, just like the American military hid in the blue bodies of the Navi blue people in the Avatar movie and infiltrated their society while the Navi thought they were them. This is what's happening. These bloodlines, this 1% and the royal bloodlines, the aristocratic bloodlines that are now in dark suits and all that stuff, the reason they incessantly interbreed with each other is because they're trying to hold basically a biological software program, which is the particular way that they function and dictates their personality. It's why they have no empathy. That's why they do things that the rest of humanity would be destroyed by doing, like bombing the innocent from the sky day after day. And this They Live movie actually depicted this. And this guy, played by Roddy Piper, former famous wrestler in America, realized this.
He found some class.
Yeah,
the
basic story was that he discovered some sunglasses which were made by other groups that are also realized this. And when he put the sunglasses on, and he looked at certain people, and they were still human, but he looked at others, almost all in positions of power, though not all, and he saw them for what they were, what was hiding inside that human body, and it was absolutely not human. But where I'm leading with this, in terms of the question about the Matrix and do they know, Roddy Piper said in this interview many, many, many years after the movie came out that They Live was not a movie, it was a documentary, because they were depicting something that's actually happening. And so there are people who are aware. Now, then you ask the question, what's their motivation? Because there's two ways of looking at it. And there will be some that are positively motivated, no doubt about it. But there's two ways of looking at it. One, that, yeah, they're trying to get the information out. But there's something else which is called preemptive programming. And I talked about this yesterday briefly. The world that they want to bring in of control of the human mind by artificial intelligence. So there is no human mind. We just become vehicles for artificial intelligence, which does all our thinking and perceiving. That's what transhumanism is really all about. It is so fantastic and so different to what we've had before that, of course, there's that chasm of what people have been used to where they want to take us, and not in a long time from now either. There's that resistance. I don't like this. What's going on? So if you notice, I've been noticing this for years and years and years. Movie after movie comes out which depicts the very world that I'm talking about, and the transhumanist AI-controlled world that we're talking about. And it's like, oh, they're trying to tell us then. Well, hold on a minute. What that's doing, it's making the subconscious familiar with that world. So when they bring it in for real, which is where they want to go, people are not so resistant, because somehow it's a world far more familiar to them because of all the movies and all the television programs that have depicted that very AI robot technology controlled
Terminator movie,
reality.
Events, the Hunger Games, that's what they want us to be.
They're programming familiarity with what they want. So they dilute resistance to it as they bring it in. That's what preemptive programming is all about.
And so they show us the pictures, so we visualize them in our dreams, and we are creators, actually. And when we get these pictures imposed on us, then we create this future, probably. But people are waking up, or should wake up, so that these things shouldn't happen.
Well, that's an interesting point, Joe, because I've actually gone into that very thing in Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told. Where I pointed out that we are being manipulated, as you rightly say, we are being manipulated to create the world they want. And it kind of works like this. Our perceptions, whatever they are interacting with what people call the quantum field of possibility and probability. All around us is this teeming field of possibility, probability. And our perceptions dictate what part of, and what range of this possibility and probability we actually connect with, and therefore decode through the brain and genetic and DNA decoding systems into a reality that we experience. This is why, in the simplest terms, someone who sees everything as with the glass half full will experience a life of that will express that perception of the glass half full. Oh, nothing ever happens to me, everything goes wrong. Yeah, but you're creating it. This is what they don't want us to know. They don't want us to know that our perceptions are creating our reality. Because if we knew that, we could change our perceptions and change our reality. This information must not be circulated. This is, you know, you can have all the revelations about surveillance and all the revelations about banking, all the revelations about the manipulation of war, all of which are important, we should know about. The biggest thing they're terrified of is humanity knowing that our perceptions create our reality. So, if they can download a perception of the world and the way the world is going to our perceptual processes, we, as you've indicated, we literally, collectively, play a major part in manifesting that reality. That's why I've said in the book, don't accept that what I'm describing here that they want to do is inevitable. Don't accept that. Because if you do, you're going to play your part in creating it. So yes, absolutely right. But look how far we've gone, Joe, in just a short time, from what people hear on the evening news or read in the paper, which is all reporting the world from the post. I call it the postage stamp consensus. This narrow band of limited perceptions of the world. Look how far we've gone already. And we, of course, you know, talk for long enough, you're going to go over the horizon in terms of how far you're going to go away from what people are told from cradle to grave the world is all about, before we really understand the full nature of actually what's happening in that narrow band of what we call human society.
What's important for me is that we humans have a connection in our heart with all this, and you have had this experience where you have been in the state where you were seeing the other reality, but most of us don't have that. But for me, it's important that we go away from our brain thinking and from our gut feeling, which can be manipulated. Our heart cannot be manipulated, because that's on a higher frequency than these forces have. They can't reach it. So what is your message to the people to overcome all these things over the heart and in your daily life?
Well, there's an organization in America called the Heart Math Institute that's done a lot of work looking at the power of the heart. Not the power of the physical heart, but they are connected. Well, it's not a physical heart, of course. But this vortex, series of vortexes through the body, which interpenetrate different levels of being in the human energetic fields, we call the body. And they have different points of interaction with the wider reality. The brain is basically a low level, compared with this, is a low level of perception. The brain thinks, and the brain thinks for a simple reason: it doesn't know. So it has to work it out, or try to work it out. The emotional vortex chakra in the belly, that doesn't think, it reacts. It reacts. Reacts with an emotional response. Doesn't think. So what humanity has been has had done to it is it's been manipulated out of the heart interaction with the wider reality, which I'll come to, and into a combination of the gut, emotional response without thinking, and thinking, which doesn't know. That's why it's trying to work it out. Work it out. Now, just look at the body language, which tells you everything. Body language is an open book on so much. People say, I'm thinking. They point to the head, because that's where they think. When they know, where do their hands go? Where do our hands go? I just know. They go here instinctively, because this knows, because it's connected to a level of consciousness beyond this program, beyond this manipulation, that does know. That's why it knows. I just intuitively know. I don't know why I've got to be there tomorrow. I just know I have. And you go there, and suddenly some synchronistic thing happens, which wouldn't have got done if you'd have listened to this, which is going, what are you going to go there for? That's ridiculous. You've got an appointment tomorrow. You know, which is always trying to talk us out of following this. I mean, if I look at my life over the last nearly 30 years, while I've been on this journey, it's simply been one thing. When this and this have been in conflict, I've gone with this. Simple as that. So I've uncovered all this information is because this has led me to it. This would have said, oh, you don't have to go there tomorrow. I know. Think of the inconvenience. Doesn't matter. I know. And what if you look at it, the details of the way the manipulation works and the way it's worked in the deeper in the shadows, it's to shut this down. It's to shut this down. People ask, should I go with my heart? I mean, the language is looking us in the face. Should I go with my heart? Should I go with my head? What does your gut tell you? What does your gut tell you? What does my emotions tell me? Should I go with my head? Well, let me have a think. Should I go with my heart? I know. And so this has been shut down. And if you look at the world that's depicted in the Avatar movies with the Navi, the blue people, they were a heart society in the sense that through the heart, they knew that everything was one.
They connect to trees and animals.
Exactly. They were communicating with the trees. They were communicating with the animals because they were able to do that because they were tapping into a field of consciousness which the animals and trees and the natural world are also tapped into, and therefore it's like a bush telegraph, if you like, you could describe it as. That's where the communication was possible, so what they were doing was communicating from the heart. And what has happened to humanity is we've been pulled out of the heart into the head and the gut. If you look at the way people respond and view the world and interact with the world, it's either from the head or it's from the gut, emotion. It's increasingly emotion. That's why we live in an increasingly post-fact world. It's because it's all coming from emotion, nothing to do with fact. We're even being pulled out of the head into that now. How many interact with the world through their heart? Through their intuition, through their empathy with what other people are suffering. Because this is where we get empathy from, this is where we get compassion from, this is where we get true love from, not attraction love, as I call it, or mind love. Ooh, yeah, fancy you, you look nice. Instead, it's this connection, which manifests itself, funnily enough, not in, ooh, you look nice, or ooh, yeah, I like that, it manifests as friendship. Friendship. Think of friendship.
From heart to heart.
Heart. That's what friendship is.
Yeah.
But because we connect love with men and women, or men and men, women and women, whatever, being attracted to each other and having sex, that's love. No, that's attraction. You can have that and friendship, but how many relationships have the attraction, but they don't have the friendship? they don't last that long, do they?
Yeah.
So if I'm attracted to you, and person's attracted to me on this level, then a relationship might start. But most of those kind of relationships become wars of control. Who's going to control the relationship? You're not doing what I want. You're not doing what I want. Oh no, you do that to me, I'm leaving. Slam. What does friendship do? It's a great line, a great line. A friend is the one who walks into the room when everyone else walks out. Because friendship, a heart friendship, which is what friendship really is, true friendship, says, I don't agree with what you've done, but I'm here for you. It's a completely different level of connection to, how dare you do that to me? I'm going home to my mother. Slam.
Actually, you come around a lot. You have been on a world tour. I come around a lot also. And there are people, sometimes they are cold. You don't feel them on the heart level. They are can be highly intelligent. They can be very successful, but you don't feel them.
Exactly.
But there's, from in my impression, there are much more people than you think who are really hearty people and nice, and it doesn't describe it maybe good, but who really have this heart feeling. Average people, wherever we are around, what's your perception? Can they really kill all that people,
no,
humans have?
Well, what they're trying to do is complete the job of destroying that through connecting us to artificial intelligence. Part of that will be to shut down the heart completely. But because the heart is so powerful, the energy is so powerful, the level of frequency it's connected to is so powerful, they have to work 24/7 all the time to keep that closed. And you know, it's like, you know, we had that. I'll give you an example of how it can just break out. You know, the tower block in London that was subject to that extraordinary fire, which was just burned the place down. Lots and lots of people died.
Yeah.
Children.
Much more than here.
Children died. Yeah. And people lost family, loved ones. It was absolutely horrific. Now, in that tower block were Muslims and different people from different cultures, white people, whatever. And if you look at that from the perception of many people, which is, you know, racial tension and racial prejudice and all that. And maybe, oh, I'm sure, without any question, people would have looked at what was people, the kind of people that were in that block, and they would have had a racial standpoint, or maybe a racial prejudice, whatever. But when that burnt down, in the extraordinary horror of it, that went out the window. Not with everybody, because some people are so bigoted they'll never recover in this lifetime. But people, suddenly it was like, boom. What's it matter what color they are? What's it matter where they came from? What's it matter what their religion is? And so there's this great outpouring of compassion. But then, of course, what happens is, like the initial reaction response, the compassionate response, the empathetic response, then, you know, people get on with their lives, and so things come up in the news to take the place of Grenfell House, the tower block, and what happened there, and people go back. If we could just hold that instead of going back to this, then the world would be a very, very different place, because this knows that your color, your creed, your religion, it doesn't matter. It's just an illusion, a set of experiences, an illusory set of labels.
So this
lives that world.
Yeah.
This knows it's a nonsense.
those forces try to keep us in fear. They have terror attacks all the time, and people are not reacting like they think we should react. That they say we need more police. Okay, that's being said, but actually there should be civil war by now through all these terrorist attacks. But people are much more, they're not reacting the way the Archons think we react. Do we see that?
Well, this Joe has been one of the great powers of the alternative media, because before the alternative media started communicating in any way widely, while we were still putting leaflets out, people got their version of a world event, a terrorist attack, a war, whatever, from the mainstream news. So, of course, they got the official narrative unquestioned, overwhelmingly, with a few honorable exceptions, and they are a few. And so their perceptions were formed from that knowledge. Some people had a natural skepticism about authority and maybe said, I'm not sure I believe that. But most people did, because there was no other narrative. There was no, if a terrorist attack happened, there was no other explanation for it except the one you saw on the news or in the newspaper. What the alternative media has done, why they're trying to delete it, is say, actually, there's another way of looking at this. Like, what if they were just creating a problem here on purpose so that they could offer a solution to the problem to change the world in ways that would never have been allowed had they not had the problem, with what I call problem, reaction, solution. And people have gone, well, that sounds as if that, I could have sympathy with that. And then they watch that actually, as a result of that attack or whatever it is, whatever the problem is, they actually have done now what people in the alternative media said they would do as a result of this. And people have gone, well, hold on a minute. So when the next one comes along, then they're no longer saying, oh, yeah, it's on the news, this is what happened. They're going, well, hold on a minute. And this is what we're talking about. The fact that people are now more and more questioning, I mean, RT, the Russian station, has this mantra and kind of slogan of question more. No. Question everything. That's what we need to do, because everything needs to stand up to our scrutiny. Don't let things into your perceptual processes unchecked, unquestioned, unobserved. Don't let them enter your subconscious and be your sense of reality without question. Question everything. And I'll tell you, after 30 years nearly of experiencing this, when you question almost everything, it doesn't stand up to questioning, especially if it's delivered by a man in a dark suit or even a woman in a dark suit.
When I first heard your name and people are looking for you on the internet, they'll find the reptilian topic. How important is that for you today? When I listened to your lecture, it's not really the topic that there are reptilians, maybe the Queen or the Royals have a connection. Is that still important to you?
Oh, absolutely. The thing is, when I do these talks, the person who directed the cameras yesterday for a DVD of the talk that we recorded, he did my recorded my talk in at Wembley Arena in London in 2012 and in 2014. And he said to me after the talk yesterday, it's moved on, hasn't it? And of course, it must move on. It's interesting. Years ago, I used to speak at multi-speaker conferences, alternative conferences, UFO conferences, all these kind of things, particularly in America. And I would watch people make presentations, and I'd think, yeah, that's interesting, and that stuff. And then I would go back 5 years later, and I would watch the same people speak, and they'd say the same things. They moved on a day. Now, there's so much to know. We can't be going round in circles. We can't go into a cul-de-sac or an alcove and sit there and just keep repeating the same stuff. We've got to move on. We've got to know more and more and more, knowing what's going on. So what the talk has done is moved on. What the books have done is move on. There's no point in me repeating what I've said about the whole reptilian subject in detail at length before. Excuse me. Again, now. Because if people want to hear that or read that, they go to those books and they'll get the whole full detail. As I've understood more and things change in the world, then you start to emphasize that and what that means, which is not in the earlier books. So this is why. It's not because you're saying, oh, that's not important anymore and I wish I hadn't said it. Absolutely not. But there's no point in just going over and over and over what's available elsewhere. So, yes, this whole reptilian thing is very, very important. I mean, what chances are there that in the Nag Hammadi texts that have been in a sealed jar between about 400 AD and 1945, that they would talk about this archontic force, this archontic consciousness, what they call the formless ones, very much in the way the Islamic belief system describes the jinn, just different names for the same force. What are the chances that these Gnostic texts would describe two of the ways that this consciousness, this distorted consciousness, takes form, are through a reptilian form and a form that looks like a gray fetus with big dark black eyes? I mean, they're describing a reptilian form. They're describing what we call the greys. People might say, well, there's a lot of interpretations, but it's difficult to argue against the fact that they are describing what people are describing today in modern times, in terms of entities that they've interacted with and been abducted by, etc. So what are the chances of that? And I think this is an important kind of correlation or connection between what I was saying about the reptilians, who are obsessed with technology, that's their way of control, technology, and what is happening now with transhumanism. Because this reptilian force, which is just a vehicle for this archontic distortion, which is why they're psychopathic, it's why humans are psychopathic, why these 1% are psychopathic, because they're all different expressions of this same psychopathic awareness, consciousness. And so these reptilians don't operate in our world. Some do. Some operate within our world, but most of the manipulative ones operate outside of our visible light frequency range. So we have what you might call a timeline in our world, where we say human history, and then we discovered bronze, and then, you know, all the rest of it, steel and what have you, smartphones. But in the timeline of this reptilians, in their reality, all this technology that is coming out and is called cutting edge technology and the latest gadget, the reptilians in their reality had that technology, knew about that technology when humans were knocking rocks together. So what has happened, and of course there is an interface, not least in deep underground military bases in places like America, which go way down into the ground, and you need a higher security clearance the lower you go, where there's an interface between these reptilian entities and these grey entities, with that technological knowledge, and human scientists working for this elite. And so that's where the technology transfer takes place for this high technology. As I said in the talk and in the book, Everything You Need to Know But Never Been Told, people, we surely are not naive enough to believe that these people are sitting around a table who desperately need this computerized technology and high technology for mass control. Without it, they couldn't do it. And they're just sitting there waiting, going, when is some geek in a garage gonna invent what we need for the next stage of control? Are you having a laugh? I watched a two-part BBC documentary on Silicon Valley, The Devil's Playground, which is about controlling the flow of information and driving this transhumanist agenda, connecting us to AI. And there was a sequence in one of these documentaries of garage doors in California. And the reporter was saying, behind this garage door, this gadget that changed the world was invented. And this gadget, behind this garage door. And I can imagine these manipulators watching that, sitting around a table going, too many garage doors. Yes, we've got to change the narrative here, or they're going to suss what's going on. No more garage door cover stories. Because they're not going, when's the geek going to get the next stage? Oh, God. Ooh. No, it's being transferred. And that's why the speed of transfer of this high technology, which is absolutely essential to this AI human takeover, is coming in and coming in and coming in. All they've got is the cover stories to explain why it's coming in. Why is DARPA and the CIA funding the seed funding, the technologies that come out through Apple, that come out through all these things. Why do they fund that? Why was Google seed funded by the CIA before it became known as Google? I mean, look at it. And therefore, what we're seeing is a technological transfer out of this other dimension, this reptilian with a reptilian grey force. That's pushing this agenda on. That's why people like Ray Kurzweil, the PR man for Frankenstein, a Google executive, is one of the forefront promoters of this transhumanism. That's why he's accurately, over the years, somewhere about 80% accuracy, they say, predicting when things are going to happen. He's now saying that humanity will be connected to the cloud AI by 2030, because they are aware of when the technology is going to be rolled out. They're not waiting for it to be invented. It's already invented. It was invented while people were knocking rocks together and going, ugh, ugh. So this is what's happening. And so the reptilian thing is, no, it's not less important. But I can now put it into a context of modern events in a way that obviously you couldn't before.
Okay, David, we have to wrap it up. And the main topic is that there are forces called the Archons or whatever, artificial intelligence, and it's trying to transform us humans into them,
yeah,
without a heart. But yeah, we have the chance to be in our heart and stay humans. Is that the main message that you have?
I wouldn't even say stay human, because I think, you know, we if we self-identify with human, we're again self-identifying with a label. The prime thing is to remember that we're consciousness. And when the Ray Kurzweils of this world say we'll become superhuman if we allow our minds to become AI minds, that's a con. Of course, it's a con. It's just a selling point. It's just the nightmare being sold as a dream. We are already superhuman. We are already beyond human. Human is just a vehicle and an experience for that I that we are, which is consciousness, a state of awareness. That's what we need to self-identify with. And then, I'll tell you from experience, you start to see things you couldn't see before. You start to see pictures instead of pixels that you could see before.
But for humans, we have the connection. We have the heart.
This is the connection, yeah. This is the connection. You know, if I had to put my hand somewhere on my body, steady, that is close to the true identity of human awareness, it wouldn't be here, and it wouldn't be here. Be here. This is as close within the human form that you get to
you
the true
say, it's
I.
Me, it's me.
Yeah, I. Yeah. I. Me. This is I, or this is the nearest expression of the true I that you can have in human form.
Thank you, David, for what you do.
Pleasure.
Over the years. And
thanks, Joe.
Thank you. I hope we see each other. We have done interviews over so many years now, and I hope somewhere we will have a laugh about what's going on.
Well, I ain't stopping, mate. I ain't stopping.
Right.
Just going to run faster.
Thank you, David.
Cheers, Joe.